But what is shocking and should continue to shock the conscience of the international community is the horror of these crimes.
Myanmar rejects bail for two jailed Reuters journalists amid reports of mass graves in Rakhine State. It's Friday, February 1st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're a part of our program. You can join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, Russian athletes have their doping bans overturned, but will they be in this month's Olympics? How does Islamic State recruit young fighters in Afghanistan? And companies drop millions for ad space at the Super Bowl, but will it pay off? It's all on today's VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us. A Myanmar district court has rejected bail for two Reuters journalists because it said they had committed a non-bailable offense. Wa Lon and Cho Se-U are accused of violating the country's Official Secrets Act. They were working for Reuters news agency on the Rohingya crisis in Rakhine State when they were arrested in mid-December. The UN says that Myanmar's military has been committing ethnic cleansing in its crackdown on Rohingyas, which started last August after a Rohingya militant group attacked a police station. Stéphane Dujarric is the spokesman for UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
As you know, the Secretary General has expressed his concern at the erosion of the press freedom in Myanmar, and he has called for the international community to do whatever it can to secure the release of the journalists and to ensure press freedom in the country.
The court's decision Thursday came as the Associated Press confirmed more than five previously unreported mass graves in the Myanmar village of Gudarpin through multiple interviews with more than two dozen survivors in Bangladesh refugee camps and through time-stamped cell phone videos. UN Special Rapporteur on Myanmar, Yang-Hee Lee, said Thursday that a fact-finding mission is needed in the country to investigate the alleged massacres.
And I received scrolls of names of people who are alleged killed or missing. So this is something that needs to be investigated, and this is why we've called for a fact-finding mission and an access to the fact-finding mission and the access for international media to have to the Butidong and Mongdo area.
The Myanmar government regularly claims that massacres like Gudarpin never happened and has acknowledged only one mass grave containing 10 terrorists in the village of Indin. Richard Weir is a researcher at Human Rights Watch's Asia Division. He said that the mass graves discovered by the Associated Press are just the beginning.
People describe to us not only mass graves, but sites where bodies were burned and then taken away. So it's possible that in addition to the mass graves found in each of these individual locations, the bodies and evidence of these crimes are dispersed throughout the affected areas in northern Rakhine State.
Meanwhile, a spokesperson for de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi said a gasoline-filled bomb was thrown at the leader's lakeside home Thursday in Yangon. She was not in the house when the incident happened, and there was little damage. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Amid continued criticism, Myanmar still spending big on military. No injuries when gasoline bomb thrown at Aung San Suu Kyi's Myanmar home. Remaining group of North Korean athletes arrives for Pyeongchang Games. India announces raft of measures for rural development. And Pakistani politician and wife found dead at home in Karachi. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The Winter Olympic Games start in 1 week, and 28 Russian athletes have had their Olympic doping bans overturned by the Court of Arbitration for Sport. The decision throws the International Olympic Committee's policy on Russia's systematic doping into turmoil. Mathieu Rieb is the Secretary General of the Court of Arbitration for Sport.
The CAS arbitrators unanimously found that the evidence put forward by the IOC in relation to this matter did not have the same weight in each individual case. This is why in 28 cases, the evidence collected was found to be insufficient to establish that an anti-doping rule violation was committed by the athletes concerned.
The IOC has already invited 169 Russians to the Pyeongchang Olympics under a neutral flag. It may now be forced to allow in athletes that it deemed dopers 8 days before the games begin. Mark Adams is the IOC spokesperson. He says that the decision does not mean the Russians will be eligible to compete at this month's Olympics in Pyeongchang.
The result of the CAS decision does not mean that athletes from the group of 28 will be invited to the Games. Not being sanctioned does not automatically confer the privilege of an invitation.
The IOC last year banned 43 Russians over doping offenses at the Sochi Olympics 4 years ago, ruling that they had been part of a systematic doping scheme. The Russian director of the laboratory, which handled samples for the Sochi Games, said that he had given cocktails of banned steroids to athletes and swapped tainted samples for clean urine on orders from Russian state sports officials. Meanwhile, Russia's Olympic Committee urged the IOC to reconsider their decision to ban Russian athletes from this month's games. The vice president of the Olympic Committee in Russia, Stanislav Poznyakov, told journalists Thursday the committee came up with a list of 15 athletes it wanted to get invited to the Pyeongchang Games. The Russian government has vehemently denied ever supporting doping. The Olympics open in Pyeongchang, South Korea, February 9th. We're happy you're with us on this Friday morning. I'm David Byrd in Washington. In 2015, Islamic State announced a new chapter for Pakistan and Afghanistan. It was called Islamic State Khorasan Province. Eastern Afghanistan became its stronghold. ISKP, as it is known, recruited from the local population, including children. VOA's Aisha Tanzim met two such boys. This is their story.
I was 9 years old when I was with them. Now I'm 12. They used to show us videos on how to fight and carry out suicide bombings.
For almost 2 years, Lal Muhammad and his brother Bakht-e Ali lived and trained with Islamic State Khorasan. Now they're back and trying to readjust to a normal life. We meet at their home in the Achin district of Nangarhar province in eastern Afghanistan, under the watchful eye of their father and the local police chief. ISKP came to their houses to recruit the men and boys.
They would show us videos of infidels, oppressing Muslims. They told us the local police and army were their puppets, that we needed to do jihad against them.
Their father, Taviz Khan, was convinced, so he joined ISKP, taking his sons with him.
I was around 16 years old. I didn't have this beard then. There were a lot of kids there. They used to tell these young kids that if they carried out suicide bombings, all their troubles would be over and they would go straight to paradise.
The instructors trained them military style, with physical exercises and weapons training, teaching them how to fire pistols, AK-47 automatic assault rifles, bombs, and rocket launchers. The ultimate goal was to make them suicide bombers. Eventually, they took the younger brother into battle.
Daesh fighters told me we were going to be in a firefight and that we would stay behind and open fire from our check post. You should go forward and explode your suicide vest.
But they lost that fight and had to retreat. He came back alive, only to witness more violence.
We've seen a lot of people get slaughtered. We also wanted to slaughter someone because we were told that this would bring us holy rewards from God.
Finally, it became more than they could bear. They fled with some other men. The father now works with the police, who offers some protection. But he knows the danger if ISKP were to regain control of the region. While these two young boys are now safe, no one knows what happened to the dozens of others that were in the IS-controlled madrasas with them. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Achin, Nangarhar.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Thai police deported a 74-year-old Japanese man accused of gang murder in Japan 15 years ago. Shigeharu Shirai is accused of being one of eight gangsters involved in the murder of another gang leader in 2003. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us. I'm David Byrd in Washington. On Sunday, the New England Patriots take on the Philadelphia Eagles in the National Football League's Super Bowl championship game in Minneapolis, Minnesota. This season has seen a drop in regular season viewers for the NFL, in part because of turmoil over player protests during the U.S. national anthem. But Sunday's game is still expected to attract more than 110 million viewers in the United States alone. And some fans will be paying as much attention to the commercials as to the game.
And I won't ever stop, because you know I gotta win every day, day. Go! See, do we really wanna pop it? Go! Just know that you will never flop.
Doritos Blaze, a bold new flavor that brings the heat.
And if you want me, then come on, get me now. Is you with me now?
PepsiCo used Oscar-winning actor Morgan Freeman and Game of Thrones star Peter Dinklage in a lip-sync battle ad for two of its products, a new Doritos chip and a new Mountain Dew drink. A 30-second ad is costing more than $7 million, but advertising expert Tony Case says that companies are willing to pay whatever they have to.
Because of the massive viewership of the Super Bowl, more than 100 million people watch the Super Bowl. There's nothing even remotely approaching that in terms of a mass audience for advertisers. So it's money well spent for the brands.
Anyway, sometimes I wish I were human.
Whoa! Look at me! I'm human! Do you want to eat me?
No.
Do you want to eat me?
No, thanks.
No? Would you like to eat me?
Mars Candy Company has actor Danny DeVito featured as the red M&M candy in one of its ads. Budweiser uses an emotional appeal where brewery workers change from brewing beer to providing water for hurricane victims. Japanese automaker Lexus teamed up with Marvel Comics' new film Black Panther for its Super Bowl ad. Tony Case says, in the wake of the sexual harassment and assault scandals that have erupted in the United States in recent months, advertisers will probably shy away from provocative or titillating content in order to avoid any backlash.
Because of the backlash against advertisers like Carl's Jr. and GoDaddy, which have had very sort of sexually charged ads in the past, there's been a lot of negative reaction to that over the years. So now I think there's going to be even more caution on the part of advertisers.
The Super Bowl will air Sunday beginning at 23 hours 30 UTC. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes, and you can also find it on SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you, that is. You can find us at voanews.com. And let us hear from you, VOA Asia Facebook, and email us at voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Iden Okut. I'm David Byrd. Enjoy your day.